It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock, and very shortly we'll begin the Thursday morning show here on WGTD. We want to remind you that the morning show is not only heard broadcast over WGTD Monday through Friday from 8, 10 until 9 o'clock, but is also available as a podcast. In fact, in the podcast of the morning show, you can hear a different morning show 7 days a week, including interesting morning show interviews from the past found in the archives that are shared on Saturdays and Sundays. To hear the morning show podcast without fail, you should subscribe to it and be sure that you look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the major podcast provider platforms. Today's morning show begins in just a moment. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, today is Kalen Day. It is Kalen Polamaris's turn to bring us an interesting guest on the morning show, as she began to do a couple of months ago. Of course, for years before that, our good friend Nan Calvert had taken care of bringing to us interesting guests talking about the natural world and or the environment. She has handed that responsibility over to Kalen, and we've appreciated what she has done thus far. Today, Kalen has reached out to somebody at the Lake County Forest Preserve in order to talk about a very interesting topic. Before we get to that, Kalen, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
Good to have you here. Mm-hmm. So you wanted somebody to talk about cicadas. So tell us what prompted you to want to explore this particular topic.
Well, I've had a lot of people asking me about cicadas, and here in Kenosha, we are technically out of the range for this explosion of cicadas that's among us that's about to happen, and we are not a part of that. And so people keep asking us, why aren't we a part of that? Why is Kenosha not on the map? What's with these cicadas? And I don't have the answers to that. So I wanted to bring on someone who knows everything about that. And the Lake County Forest Preserves are doing a lot for the cicadas the next few months. So I wanted to kind of spotlight that.
Very good. And I should have mentioned, although I think a lot of people listening are already aware, that Kalen Polamaris is on the staff of Hawthorne Hollow. So, but as you're walking around the forests, you are not encountering cicadas, for instance.
There are cicadas. Definitely there are cicadas. Not yet, but soon. But these particular set of cicadas are different.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So we will be exploring that. So tell us how you ended up lining up the guest for today's program, somebody who I understand you only met today.
Yeah, so Alyssa and I just met. I reached out to the Lake County Forest Preserves on their Ask an Educator email. That's a place where they have, I'm assuming, naturalists or environmental educators on staff who can answer questions, just general nature questions that people might have. So I reached out there looking for someone that knew about cicadas and wanted to come talk about their program. So I first reached Mark Hurley, and he couldn't be here today. So we have Alyssa, who is the director of education. So
very good. So you're making her acquaintance, and as I am for the first time, Alyssa Furkus, director of education at Lake County Forest Preserve. We're really happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you for making the trip up from far away Illinois. Where exactly do you live? Where were you driving from today?
It wasn't a far drive for me today. I'm actually from Lindenhurst.
Oh, okay.
So just about 30 minutes.
Very good. So tell us, first of all, how long you've been at Lake Forest Lake County Forest Preserve.
Yeah, so I've been at Lake County Forest Preserve for almost 6 years now, and I started in the education manager role. And just like Kaylin mentioned, we have a group of environmental educators on staff, and that was my background, was environmental education.
Good. Tell us a little bit about where you come from originally. Are you from this part of the country originally?
Yeah. So I actually was born in the Midwest. I was born in central Wisconsin. My parents moved to Northern California when I was quite young. So my love for the environment actually started on the ocean. And I kind of followed that track for many years. I used to study and research and teach about whales all the way from Maui to up the coast of California down to Australia for a few years and Alaska for a few years.
Wow.
And so I really followed the passion and of the marine life. But then I realized that as much as I thought whales and the ocean were incredible, I really felt like I was more driven to make the connection for people to fall in love with what's in their own backyard. And I felt like that was so meaningful to be able to do that.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit more about the Lake County Forest Preserve. First of all, even for those of us who know we've driven past it, we might not be able to just absolutely say exactly where it is. Tell us exactly where you're located and kind of what it's all about.
Yeah, so the Lake County Forest Preserve, we're actually the second largest forest preserve in the state of Illinois. We have 64 forest preserve sites, so giving you an exact address would be near impossible.
Right.
But we have 64 different sites, and we manage over 31,000 acres of land. And in that land, we also have an accredited museum, a Dunn Museum, that often supports the work that the forest preserves do. And we're hoping to continue to acquire land and continue to restore that land and preserve that land.
So what does that term mean when something is a forest preserve?
Yeah,
I mean,
great.
I suspect something very legal and official is attached to that name.
It is. So a forest preserve is a plot of land that the Forest Preserve has actually bought. It could be or donated from, and it's not to be developed on. It's to be either restored or preserved depending on the quality of the ecosystems on that land. And it's a place that's dedicated for the natural world, for the animals, for us to use, to kayak, to run. And it's just a plot of land where people can't develop it.
So, Kaylin, how does this compare to Hawthorne Hollow, where you are on staff?
So, it's my understanding that the Forest Preserve is government land.
Correct.
We are privately owned and we're a nonprofit, so the difference just being who's in charge of that land. So, we are operated by our staff members and we don't get any, like, funding or any sort of government support or anything. And that's different from the Lake County Forest Preserves, where they're government. And so there's different avenues in which we all get funding and the availability to the public and things like that.
Right. But the mission would be very,
essentially,
very comparable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So tell us more about who is on the staff. I mean, you've already mentioned a little bit about some part of that. And in a sense, like, where you are located, where you do what you do.
Yeah. So for I'll focus on, we have a huge staff, but I'll focus on the education staff that are working on cicadas, for example. They can be based out of two locations. They have a spot in Deerfield, Illinois, which is called the Ryerson, Edward L. Ryerson. And then we also have the general offices in Libertyville. And that's where most of the education staff, that's where they reside. Now, even though they are there, they are able to teach in most of those 64 different preserves. So they might be housed in a spot, but they might only be there for 10 minutes throughout that day. They might be teaching all over the county.
Gotcha. And that magic number 64, just so I understand and our listeners understand, that's all within the Lake County Forest Preserves?
That is all within.
So you have 64 different sites.
Correct. 64 different sites within the Forest Preserve. So it's pretty amazing.
Interesting. So it's not just this solid square of forest preserve. It's something here and something there and so on. What would be the smallest little units?
The small we have a few smaller, like Lake Carina is a little bit of a smaller, just a few acres. But then we have some that are, you know, hundreds of acres.
Wow. Fascinating. So, Kaylin, let's circle back to your desire to reach out to Lake County. Tell us a little more. I think some of our listeners will be interested to know this whole matter of the cicada explosion and we're not on the map and so on. Just explain a little bit more about what you're talking about there.
Yeah, so again, Alyssa will probably be able to say more detail and more correctly.
Sure.
But it's my understanding that this year there is this explosion of cicadas where every few years there is an emergence, a brood of cicadas that all kind of hatch the same year. So cicadas are hatching every year all the time, but there are certain years where there are bigger groups of them or there's a different type of cicada that is exploding that year.
Right.
And so we can expect, even here, even though we're not technically on that map, we can still expect to hear a lot more cicadas this year, a lot louder cicadas this year.
Right. So in other words, sometimes Kenosha is on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And some years it's not, and this is a year that we don't happen to be on that map, but just to the south of us is where this explosion occurs, and so that just sort of varies year to year.
It's the different broods again of cicadas because there's. I don't know that they're different species.
They are.
Okay.
So, yeah, yep. What Kaylin's talking about is she's referring to the annual cicadas. And these cicadas have a 2 to 3 year lifespan, but they all come out every single year. And that's going to be July or August. And they're a little bit different than the other species of cicada that we're going to dive into today.
Gotcha. All right. So what is that species of cicada?
So I'm looking at my map because you're right. There's a little tiny spot that you misses Kenosha here. But it doesn't mean that they're not around. That just means that they haven't been documented quite yet. So this is cicada mania. This is the year for the cicada. Every 17 years, the periodical cicadas, brood 13 is the brood that's kind of all around Kenosha and all around where we are right now. And they emerge by the billions. And it happens every 17 years. They're called periodical cicadas. And instead of emerging in like July or August, which we call the dog day cicadas or the dog days of summer, these periodical cicadas emerge in late spring and early summer. So we are actually expecting them in Deerfield, which is where we think that the first big emergence in Lake County might happen is in the southern part of the county. And we expect that emergence this year to be between May 23rd and May 27th.
So explain a little more about this odd cycle of 17 years. And so are we talking about something that's been there for 17 years, but just not doing anything?
It is quite a scientific mystery, and it's a phenomenon and something that I hope that people can end up celebrating, even though I know cicadas, some people don't really love the idea of cicadas, but it's such a phenomenon. So every 17 years, these cicadas emerge. They will climb vertically up the first thing that they see, which is usually a beautiful old oak tree. They'll climb up, they'll shed their exoskeleton, and they will have their wings, and that's when they become their adult form. So for 17 years, they're underneath the soil, about 8 inches down. They have a sucking mouth part, so they're sucking the juices of these roots for 17 years, growing very, very slowly. And then somehow they know in that 17 years hits that point and the soil hits 64 degrees. That's when they know it's time to come out.
Wow.
They come out, they climb up that tree, they shed their exoskeleton. They now have wings. They make tremendous amounts of noise. The males sing especially. And they mate. They etch a little tiny grooves into the tips of the branches. They lay their eggs and then they die. And then 17 years happens all over again.
Wow.
So it is, and it's interesting because most insects, these are true insects, and most insects have a life cycle between 2 and 5 years. These now cicadas have a life cycle of 17 years. And so we think, scientists think, it's because they're the slowest growing bug, insect that we know of.
So it just takes them that long.
To get to the adult form.
Wow. So the form that they take, so an egg gets laid.
Correct.
And then we're talking about a very slow development. Do we call that like the pupa?
Or? Yeah. Once the eggs are hatched, the little pupas will fall to the soil. They will start to kind of burrow in and become the nymphs.
So they hatch up above.
The tree branches up above. And then they're kind of like these little tiny white rice, like little particles of rice. And then they fall to the ground. And then that's where they will start to burrow down. And that's where they'll become that nymph life cycle and live for 17 years. And it's another thing that's really interesting. They don't have any biting mouth parts. They're not, they only have a small a mouth part that they use for the sucking those juices of those roots. Huh. So that's the only type of nutrients that they get. They start by, you know, drinking like grass, like any type of nutrients that they can get from the roots of grass. Then once they get down low, that's when they use that sucking mouth part to really get those root juices.
So they're drinking. They're drinking.
Correct.
Yep. Interesting. So that long period, And maybe some of this is a mystery, but, I mean, are they safe down there? I mean, is it possible that human beings might inadvertently disrupt this cycle?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go in there and you're building a house, let's say, at a place that was really high quality woodland and you're digging that up, I would say most of those cicadas will not survive that. Another thing that affects the cicadas is large amounts of rain or flooding. Sometimes large scale flooding events might wash them out or might move them, and that can also have impact on them. I do want to also mention that this year is particularly a very, very special year that only happens once in a few lifetimes, because the brood that's emerging here in Lake County and all around Kenosha, that's a 17-year cicada. But at the same exact time in central and southern Illinois, there's an emergence of a 13-year cicada. This has not happened since 1803.
Wow.
It happens like once every, when Thomas Jefferson was president, was the last time that this happened. And it won't happen again until 2245.
Wow.
So this, we don't have the overlap near us, but near Springdale and in the central part of the state, they have both of the broods emerging at the same time. So this is really a really special year.
Wow. So they'll be wearing their earplugs down
there. Yes. Yes. It'll be all around them.
Wow. So I guess this underscores, in a sense, my question about what we do as human beings that might disturb this long cycle. It underscores the importance of a place like the Lake County Forest Preserve or Hawthorne Hollow. I mean, that is a place where one presumes, not much of anything is going to happen to disturb this cycle, that it can go on as nature intends.
Correct. You need some high-quality woodland areas for these animals to thrive. And the Forest Preserve in Hawthorne, that's their mission, I'm sure, to make sure that that land is taken care of and it's preserved for the animals that need it. A safe haven.
I'll say, too, that with all these questions about cicadas, myself and the ecologists have been kind of looking into why is Kenosha not a part of this? And Emily at Hawthorne Hollow, she kind of came to the conclusion that Kenosha as a county doesn't have a lot of high-quality forest areas. There are small areas like Hawthorne Hollow, maybe Pets, but Pets has had a lot of work done recently that does disturb the soil, and those aren't very large areas versus in Lake County, as she said, there's thousands of acres, and so that makes a difference too. We have a lot of farmland here, a lot of agriculture and other, you know, commercial spaces in this county, so that could be a reason why we just haven't seen them here, is because we just don't have the higher quality habitat in the county overall.
Right, yeah, so when you total it all up, this is not all that hospitable for the typical cicada. Although I assume you see and hear cicadas at Hawthorne Hollow.
Absolutely. I just can't tell you that we will hear or see these particular ones.
Right, right.
And I want to follow up with Kaylin, and you know, in May, June, I would love to just to hear if you've heard any or where it could just because it, a lot of there has it 17 years is a long time, right? So the last time this happened was 2007. Even in Lake County, we don't really have a lot of good data about what's happening on the northwestern part of the county. We do have some woodlands up there, but we don't know. We have no documented memory or our handwritten notes. They don't really tell us a lot. So this year, we're really challenging people to help us find where these cicadas are, and we are sending people to a map where they can document it and do some community science for us to say, yes, we did hear cicadas in May and June. And if you hear them in May and June, chances are those cicadas are the periodical cicadas.
Fascinating.
My mom swears that she heard a cicada, but she couldn't get a recording of it. And she's in Salem, so in the western end of Kenosha County. Mm. She swears she heard one already. And I said, well, it's a little early, so she might have been hearing a tree frog or something else that screams in the trees. But
right.
I will be listening in and trying
okay.
to hear.
I'm going to be following up with you just to see it.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking about cicadas on today's morning show. Kaylin Palomares is with us, of course, who is on the staff at Hawthorne Hollow. And our guest is Alyssa Furcus, who is Director of Education at the Lake County Forest Preserve, and someone who is following the big story of the cicada and the huge explosion of cicadas that will be occurring in much of northern Illinois and in a lot of southern Wisconsin, including much of WGTD's listening area, although not particularly right here in Kenosha. I'm curious, Alyssa, if you can explain this map, this kind of mysterious map that Kaylin made reference to right off the bat, a map that kind of shows where this emergence is expected to occur, a map which, as you were showing, has this little white space where Kenosha is, but otherwise it really covers quite an expanse. Who determines this, and how do they determine where the cicada is going to be emerging?
So we have tapped into some entomologists, and we do work closely with Dr. Jean Kritsky, who is the national cicada expert out of St. Joseph University. And he has kind of helped with all of this as well. We do have an exhibit at the Dunn Museum right now called Celebrating Cicadas. And so if you're interested in learning a lot more about this animal and you kind of want to do it from, you know, by walking through a museum and learning from it that way, this map is there as well. And you can learn a lot about these animals. But this map is just showing you, this is part of our horizons. This year we did this spring we did a quarterly feature on the 17-year cicada. So it's a really, I'll leave this for you just so you can have it. Mm. But in this amazing horizons, we have a cicada hotspot map that will just shows you where both the 13-year cicada and the 17-year cicada, where they're emerging and then where they're overlapping in Illinois. Because that just is something that's just so unique.
Right. So how do we know where they're going to emerge? Because for these 17 years, they're essentially hidden from the eye, right?
Correct. Yep. We know just from where they were 17 years ago.
Gotcha.
So we know where they were in 2007 and in 1990. We have records and people tell us in the local areas and private entities and they record that and then we know.
And I suppose you can't just use, I suppose it's maybe a very similar map, but you can't just keep using the same map because 17 years ago, maybe expectations were defied a little bit or who knows what. But, 17 years ago, you saw where the cicadas actually were and presumably where they were laying their eggs and
correct.
So on.
Yep, correct. So that's why we're relying on people this year. We're using the power of social media and the power of people and the power of technology to record and let us know where they're seeing these cicadas so that we can make a better map. So that, you know, in 17 years, that our map will maybe look a little bit different than this one.
First of all, I vividly remember the first time I saw a cicada. This would have been in northeast Iowa. And I don't remember how, I was probably 10 or 12. But, hearing this sound and going into I don't remember where I was, but actually being able to kind of trace the sound. And then here's this huge insect. I'd never seen any of these before. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's where this is coming from. And then I realize, and I'm hearing it from all these other places. It was really, really amazing. The other real life encounter I can remember with cicadas is going to Ravinia, the summer home of the Chicago Symphony. And they have this outdoor pavilion where the Chicago Symphony plays. And I especially remember a performance of one of my favorite operas, Tristan and Isolde, the second act, love duet. And a lot of it is so quiet and ethereal. And here's this roar in the background. I remember so vividly the cicadas, for some reason, quieting down just as this exquisite, the quiet part of this love duet was starting. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm sure these two singers are so grateful that the cicadas are just relaxing for a second. And we actually got to hear that love duet pretty well. But I remember that so vividly in that space of Ravinia. Hearing these cicadas. And do we know very much about the nature of that sound?
Yes.
I mean, how are they making the sound and why are they making the sound?
Yeah, so they're very unique in how they create and generate sound. And you're right with how, you know, loud they can be. One cicada can be 100 decibels. So that means it could be the equivalent of like a lawnmower.
Wow.
One. So if you could imagine what millions might sound like. But a lot of insects, they create sound by rubbing their legs together, rubbing their appendages together with their bristles, and that creates sound. But cicadas, they actually have timbals in their abdomen, and they're like it's a muscle, and they contract the muscle, sort of like, I don't know if you've ever seen those poppers, but if you have a popper and it kind of explodes.
Mm.
So that's sort of, the abdomen is pretty, pretty hollow. So what happens is they contract these timbals, and that contraction and with that, like that, that creates that large echo in that body. And so it creates sound by those timbals that are on the abdomen. So it's pretty incredible.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And do we know, like, when they're doing that, are they doing it for a particular purpose?
They are,
Not that we can ask the cicada, but can we surmise?
Yes, they have particular songs or for mating. They're attracting a mate. So it's typically the males that are the loudest. The females are able to, but they usually don't. It's usually the males that are trying to attract a mate. And that's their mating call.
Wow. So what about what cicadas do besides mating and then laying eggs and then dying? What do we know about otherwise what their behavior is? I mean, how they kind of function in their habitat and what do they eat? Are they a pest? That sort of thing.
So those are great questions. Most of their life, they're, you know, the nymphs under the ground. That's the majority of their life. Once they become that adult form, they really only are around for weeks.
Mm.
So they live a very short adult life cycle, but they are incredibly important to the ecosystem. So when cicadas emerge from the ground, they naturally aerate the soil. They come up through the holes. So it's naturally aerating the soil. They come up in the millions, and they provide so much food for so many different animals. They say that red-bellied woodpeckers, blue jays, typically after a large emergence, 1 to 3 years, you see more eggs in their nest. You see more successful, so they're getting a lot more food. Not just are the animals that are eating, because everything really eats cicadas. It's not just the animals that are eating cicadas that are benefiting. It's the animals that they would be eating if there weren't for cicadas. So, caterpillars, grasshoppers, animals that typically would be their main food source are kind of have a reprise. They have like a little break from having to be that main food source for those animals. And cicadas kind of become that main food source. And that's really important. And even when they die, their bodies are very rich in nitrogen. And nitrogen fertilizes the soil naturally. So when they die and they decompose into the soil, it provides so much good nutrients for the future of those plants.
Wow.
So they're important.
Huh, that's cool. And you mentioned aeration, and of course, some of us with homes and lawns will from time to time aerate, then we have to like bring in machinery.
Correct.
And so on. And you're like saying this
is
nature's machinery for for aerating the soil.
Absolutely.
Wow. So we've already made mention of the fact that this is this particular sort of cicada, a 17-year cicada, but there's a 13-year cicada further down south.
Correct.
That also emerging this year in this very, very rare occurrence. How many cicadas are we talking about in terms of different types of cicadas? And do some of them live a very different sort of lifestyle from this particular cicada we're mostly focusing on today?
Yeah, so there are, as Kaylin mentioned before, there are two main types of cicadas. Now, all the different types have different species, and I kind of get a little bit into that. But there's your dog day cicadas, which are actually a little bit larger. They're kind of green bodies, and they come out. They have a 2 to 3 year life cycle. Then you have your periodical cicadas. Now, periodical cicadas mostly are on the central and eastern United States. And I believe there are about 200 species of cicadas throughout the world. But here in North America is where we see a lot of those periodical cicadas. Now, there are two different, there's a 13-year and then there's a 17-year. And there's many different types. There's three different species that make up our brood 13, which is the 17-year cicada. So it's a little bit confusing. Brood 13, a brood is any group of animal that comes out at a similar time. So they all emerge at the same time, and then they become their own brood, so that we can predict in 17 more years that same brood will come out again.
Oh, yeah. You used the term brood right off the bat.
Yeah. Okay. And this brood has three different species of periodical cicadas inside that brood.
So we have to track like a kind of a number of different sorts of species and then broods and so on. But it sounds like this operates like clockwork. I mean, this didn't happen a year ago. I mean, we knew with fairly firm certainty that this would happen this year.
Correct. We have been preparing for this year for a really long time. But just to add a little bit more nuance to this, is there are what we call stragglers. Stragglers are cicadas that either emerge before the year that they're supposed to or after. Either one can be called a straggler. There were a group of these that emerged in 2020. And if they emerge again in 2037, they would become their own brood, and they would be known as Brood 9.
Ah.
So this does sometimes happen depending on, the event, either very wet events or something that happened in that area that caused them all to come out at the same time. But this, then they're called stragglers. And so this adds, and this is how new broods are created.
Interesting. Wow. So are we... are we talking about something that is affected by, for instance, climate? Like if it's a very cold winter or very warm winter or up and down? I think we had a really
we
up and down.
We did have a very weird year this year.
Right. Ups
yes.
and down, and peaks and valleys, temperature-wise. Do we have any sense that cicadas care about that, or are they largely insulated from that?
Yeah, I think there is impact, of course, from the changes of climate. I think one of the largest impacts that we're seeing is just they're emerging a little bit earlier. So in 2007, their large emergence was maybe a week or two behind what we predict. We don't know exactly when they're going to emerge, so maybe I'll come back and report out exactly what happened. But from when we've been documenting these, it seems that they're coming 1 to 2 weeks earlier each cycle because the climate, the mean temperatures in those 17 years are increasing a little bit. And the Dr. Jean Kritsky, who is kind of who we go to as our go-to, specialist in cicadas nationwide, he uses a mean temperature for April. And that's when he's able to give us a 5-day window of when those cicadas will emerge.
Wow.
And he uses so May temperatures don't play into that, which is very interesting to me. So it has to reach that 64 degrees, 8 inches below the soil that triggers them. And then often with the soil has to be soft from a nice rainfall, they'll emerge. And they don't all emerge at once. It's not like a one-night thing. Because if you can imagine, some south-facing areas are a little bit warmer. They get more sunshine, so they might emerge a few days earlier. Then the deeper areas of the woods might be a few days. So it's like usually once an emerging starts, it'll be about 10 good days of these cicadas coming out of the ground.
Okay. So what is the best estimate this year?
Yeah, so this year they're saying May 23rd through May 27th in Deerfield, Illinois. So that's the southern part of Lake County. If you would, if they're already emerged in southern and in central Illinois, they're already coming out. So they're already in their adult forms in these areas as well. So as it goes up kind of around Kenosha, it might be a week after that in the surrounding areas.
Gotcha. So this explains, Kaylin, what you were saying about your mother, your dear mother, who is quite certain she heard a cicada, and that's why it is perhaps unlikely because it is as early as it is.
Yeah, the ground is still a bit cold here for a lot of different things. So, because like I track when, you know, mushrooms are going to pop up and when certain plants are going to bloom, and it's still quite early. Right. So I'm sure she was hearing a tree frog or something.
could be. So at Hawthorne Hollow, I mean, of course, you haven't worked there long enough. You wouldn't have been there for the last big emergence, to whatever extent it even occurred in Kenosha. So you don't actually probably know exactly what this is going to be like,
yeah,
cicada-wise.
I have no idea. We'll have to just wait and see what happens. I mean, we do have some really great forest habitats, so there is a good chance we will have potentially some. But I do know from the last few years being there that we do have cicadas in general. We have tons of cicadas. They're very loud. They are there. We just have to wait and see about these particular group of cicadas.
Right.
I should mention that one of the very big distinguishing features of these cicadas is their red eyes. And so I mentioned that dog day cicadas are kind of like a greenish color. They're a little bit thicker. Periodical cicadas, they're black with very distinct red eyes.
Ooh,
and
cool.
So they have a very different look.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And do they prefer certain kinds of trees, or are they not particular when it comes to that?
Yes, they do like old growth. They do prefer, like, oak trees would be kind of like their ideal. But any old growth forest, you're likely to find them.
Very good. So what kind of programming do you have planned at Lake County Forest Preserves around specifically this emergence of cicadas?
What don't we have planned? Let me tell you, we've been planning for this for so long. So we've got the largest thing that we're doing is on June 9th. We have a big festival called the Cicada Fest, and it's at Ryerson Woods, which is where we think one of the largest hot spots is going to be. And we welcome, it's free. We welcome everybody to come to learn more about cicadas, to do some fun activities. There'll be kids games, there'll be crafts, there'll be animal skins, you'll get to see and learn about the animals that benefit from cicadas. You'll learn about how important they are to the ecosystem. You get a chance to meet Dr. Jane Kritzky, will also be there, and that's from 12 to 4 in Deerfield. So if you're looking for a fun family activity to do, they'll be out and singing very loudly by then. So if you want a preview of what it's going to sound like, that will be the time. We also have a lot of different programming happening throughout May and June. So if you're interested, I would encourage you to go to www.lcfpd.org/cicadas. We have a very robust website that will give you all the information that you've ever dreamed of about cicadas. And that's also where you could record them. If you do see them, again, we're really asking for the community's help to help us make these maps as accurate as possible for the next go around.
Very good. So if somebody's mother hears a strange early emergence of a cicada, yes, let's get the proof. By the way, I meant to ask earlier, are cicadas related to anything else? I mean, when I look at a cicada, it does not remind me of anything else. It's not like, oh, that's like a katydid, but it's just bigger or whatever. I mean, it at a glance does not seem to closely resemble anything else. I mean, are they a relatively unique sort of insect?
So they are a true bug. They're in the order Heptera, so they are like a true bug. There are a lot of people used to think that they were early documentation and early records of cicadas called them locusts. They are not locusts. They're not like, that's like the grasshopper family. So they are very different than that. They don't swarm. they emerge. So it's a very different. They don't have swarms where they go and they eat all the, you know, crops. They're very different than that. But they are an actual true bug. So they're related to those Heptura, those true bugs.
Okay. And do they do any harm?
They don't. The only time that they could do harm is for if you just planted a brand new tree. The way that they lay their eggs, the female is using an ova depositor to kind of groove her little V's in the edges of branches, and that's where they lay their 400 to 600 eggs. And when they do that, if it's a really young tree, that could cause potential. So we're telling people that if they just to maybe just hold off to plant a little bit, if they're going to plant a tree, to hold off a couple of months to do that. But if they do have newer trees, there are ways that you can protect them with netting and make sure that they're not harmed. But a lot of the old growth trees and the trees that are mature, they actually act as like a natural pruning. And it kind of allows for just the not so strong branches to wean off. And it's a good process for the tree to go through.
Wow. So that's sort of nature's wise way.
Yep.
And we just need to try to not get into the middle of it, allow it to go on as it is. Well, this has been really, truly fascinating. It's one of those things that I think most of us know just the ever so slight littlest about and don't, you know, really understand, you know, this full cycle. And it's a wonder, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's a phenomenon. And I encourage people to not be scared of it, but to embrace this. This is something that might only happen a handful of number of times in our lifetime. So instead of fearing it or trying to stay away from it, just really learn about it and embrace and celebrate this natural phenomenon.
Right. For sure. And as a fan of opera, I'm going to say there's nothing wrong with loud singing, even when it comes from cicadas. So I hope people will seek it out. And Alyssa Ferkus from the staff of the Lake County Forest Preserve, we really appreciate you making the trip up to Wisconsin to join us to tell us about cicadas and about all that is offered at the Lake County Forest Preserve. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Very good. Did we cover all the ground you envisioned, Kaylin?
And more, yes.
Very good. Well, and we hope that there at your home at Hawthorne Hollow, you'll hear plenty of cicada song in the next few weeks. So I know that you have a few announcements you want to share with us as well.
Yeah, so the first one is obviously, Lake County Forest Preserves, at that museum, she was saying, at the Dunn Museum in Libertyville, there is an ongoing exhibition for the cicadas, celebrating cicadas, and that is running from now through August 4th.
Mm. Yeah.
So you can go anytime that they're open between now and then and go and actually immerse yourself in all of this if this is something that interests you.
Fantastic. So if someone's on a shopping trip down that way, or for whatever reason, this is...
Oh, I would make the trip just for that.
Of course, absolutely, easily.
Also coming up this weekend, on Saturday, May 11th, the Friends of Hawthorne Hollow is having their birds and plant sale. So that is a native plant, native and ornamental plant sale. And there's also free bird walks put on by the Hoy Audubon Society. I will be there doing a kids craft. We'll be making bird feeders. And that is on Saturday, May 11th from 9 to 1 at Hawthorne Hollow. So I hope to see some people out there. Get your native plants.
So is that something you register for, or do you just show up?
Nope, you can just show up. We will be there and bring your cash and come and stock up on all of your plants. It's a fundraiser. It's only one day, so we price them accordingly. And it's a good way to just get a few native plants, kind of test them out, see what you like. We have a lot of woodland plants, a lot of ephemerals, so it's a really great place for that because those are hard to come by.
Great.
Yeah.
And then finally on Saturday, May 18th, Bristol Woods is doing a wildflower run. So it's actually a run through Bristol Woods. It's 4.5 mile run and then a 2 mile hike. That starts at 9 a.m. on May 18th, and you can register on their website. If you are active and you like to run, it's a really great opportunity to get outside, run through some beautiful forest, and help out Bristol Woods.
Fantastic. Very, very good. Kaylin Palomares, thank you so much for arranging today's wonderful conversation, and we look forward to seeing you in June.
Yes, thank you very much, Greg.
And since we spent most of today's morning show talking about the amazing cicada, let's take a few moments to listen to some of the distinctive sounds that various kinds of cicadas make. Here's one. Here's another. And yet another. And a last one. The sound of the amazing cicada. Tomorrow on the morning show, an interview I'm very excited to share with you with a former faculty colleague of mine at Carthage College, Dr. William Kuhn, and a book that he has just written called Swimming with Lord Byron. Lord Byron, one of history's most gifted writers and someone who was a great celebrity in his day, in some respects maybe the most famous man in Western civilization for a time, not just for his writing, but for his amazingly colorful personal life. And William Kuhn explores much of that in his fascinating new book called Swimming with Lord Byron. You'll hear that conversation tomorrow, Friday, on The Morning Show. Next week, we have a number of interesting interviews planned, including one with law professor Josh Douglas talking about his book, The Court Versus the Voters, a look at the United States Supreme Court and how over the last half century, Professor Douglas contends they have done much to undermine voter rights. Next week, we'll also include on Wednesday a conversation with Seth Weidman, assistant athletic director at Carthage College and the swimming coach there, talking about Water Safety Month. We'll hear from the Four Seasons Garden Club as well, and also Doug Instinus from the Racine Theater Guild talking about their production of the musical Cabaret, which opens a week from tomorrow night. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Don't forget that it is available also as a podcast. From WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Saturday at 12 noon, Puccini's Madama Butterfly is going to be seen in movie theaters across the country in a HD simulcast, including Tinseltown in Kenosha and Renaissance in Racine. Ticket information available at metopera.org or from those movie theater box offices. Today will be cloudy with occasional showers, a high of 56. Overnight low of 44 degrees as showers end. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 61. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. NPR News and